You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome to the UFC Fight Night Whitaker versus Till post-fight live stream. And now your host, Mr. Mike Heck.
All right, we're live. And the first trip to Fight Island has come to an end. With UFC on ESPN 14, we're reacting to this jam-packed event with all of you on the official live UFC on ESPN 14 post-fight show right here on the MMA Fighting YouTube page. And maybe you're watching or listening after the fact, which is all good by me. But I am Mike Heck, being joined by Jose Youngs. E. Casey Lydon is here as well, and maybe Alex Kaylee will jump in a little while. But just a reminder, this is like the A-side after dark, so questions, comments about the event, matchmaking ideas, if you will, throw them out there. And we're here to chat with you guys and gals. And main event was a great fight. We're going to talk all about that. But Jose, you know how I like to start. We like to start with the whole shebang, the whole kit and caboodle. And I have to tell you, if you told me that this 15 fight card would end at like 11:30 Eastern time, I probably would have laughed at you, especially with the main event going all five rounds. But here we are. I'm feeling pretty fresh right now. So let's start with the overall grade here, capped off by Robert Whittaker picking up a unanimous decision win over Darren Till. What's your grade of 15 fights on UFC on ESPN 14?
Oh my God, I hate giving grades. I'll give it like a high B. I'm not quite sure I want to give it an A. It's still fresh. It was a lot of times I felt like I was paying attention, but I kept getting distracted by I was just getting distracted a lot by having to do the work that comes with an MMA journalist. And of course you pay attention to the fights that are marquee and everything. So, those first three fights going into decision, really spooked me. I thought we were going to be doing this post-fight show at like 11 o'clock Pacific time, which I obviously would not be in favor of. But after that, the fights picked up, of course, a lot of big stoppages, a lot of big star-making performances. So not quite ready to give it an A, but I'll give it high Bs, mid Bs.
That sounds fair, especially with the pacing. I thought the pacing was good. There were times in the main card where it slowed down a little bit, but then it picked right back up. And I was pretty happy with the pacing, but I'd say that's a pretty fair grade. I'd say B plus would definitely be a fair grade. Casey, what do you think? And I think AK might be joining us as well.
Actually, AK, can you talk? Can I hear you?
I can talk right now.
Oh wow!
What's up, everybody?
Hold on. Let me get AK's very handsome face on here real quick.
Hello, everyone.
He's rocking a Sean Hunter shirt from Boy Meets World right now.
Just that is not cool, Alex, at all.
Oh, can we keep that? Let's just keep that.
Sorry.
What's up, AK?
Since you asked, I give the show a solid B. I give the show a solid B. I don't know. What, Jose, what did you say?
I said high Bs, not quite ready to give it an A.
Yeah, I think I may have been overly generous to some of the other cards. I think this might be the lowest, I think, of the Fight Island cards, but only because I didn't think the highs were super high. I think there was a lot of solid fights, one great one in the co-main event, and I didn't think any of the finishes were either necessarily all-time, or I should say best of the year finishes. I know there were some nice submissions on there. But yeah, I think everything was really good. Not great. And the main event I thought was fine. I think its mileage may vary with it, but I thought it was fine. I thought it was what we expected.
And Casey, what did you think sitting there on the West Coast?
Solid B. I mean, I think the good pacing. I got to see that Contender Series 30-minute promo one more time. So that's always great. Dude, those guys go through a lot to get on that show. Man.
They do. I like how they tell the stories, though. I feel like the flyweight division can benefit from whoever produces those segments because we learn more about the Contender Series guys than we do some of the full-time fighters on the roster. But
I'm being a little jokey, but yeah, it was a very long promo that we've seen multiple times now.
It was, but we're starting to see some of these cards start to pick up, and I'm very excited for the Contender Series to kick off in a little less than 2 weeks here. But let's talk about this main event. We saw a technical fight between two of the best at 185 pounds. Robert Whittaker gets the win. I think John Gooden said it best. You could actually see the calculations going on in the minds of Robert Whittaker and Darren Till. And in the end, the Reaper gets a huge victory. AK, welcome to the program. How did you score this fight, and what did you think of the main event tonight?
I agreed with the scores. I think 48-47 was accurate. I really enjoyed the fight. I mean, I think it kind of set a weird tone because the first two were so action-packed. You had the knockdown for Till in the first one and the knockdown for Whitaker in the second one. But, I mean, both guys were respecting each other's power the whole time. You know, they just happened to catch each other in those first two rounds. And then once they figured each other out, then it actually made it harder for them to kind of land anything substantial because they're both so skilled and so smart. And we saw in the later rounds breaking out a lot of what do we call those dodges? So yeah, Jose, not just like, you know, I said like Matrix dodges or Fizzy Evs, yeah. I guess, or they said on the Cyan Chai, I think they referenced on the broadcast. So we were seeing a lot of kind of spectacular defense in the later rounds, which I know that doesn't necessarily like appeal to the casual fan, but
boo,
yeah, lots of
defense.
Thank you.
Boo.
Yeah, not a lot of just bleeding from a sweet dodge. We were seeing a lot of good evasion and feints. All the feinting and misdirection was just awesome. Like, if you really were kind of paying attention to some of the subtle things they're doing, it's like, holy crap. Like, this is like they're right in front of each other and just doing these little things. I know to some people it looks like they're doing nothing, but they're actually doing a lot. It's just kind of invisible. So, I enjoyed it. Again, I don't think it was a classic or anything, but very solid event, main event. And just great to see Robert Whittaker fighting again.
Yeah, I think the scoring was right. I had a 48-47 for Whittaker, but I had no idea how the judges were going to score this fight because of the two knockdowns. The fifth round was interesting because Whittaker got the takedowns, took the back, but he wasn't able to do much with it, and then Till just busted open Whittaker's ear, and that was pretty nasty as well. So I had no idea how these judges were going to score that fight, but they went with the same way that I had scored it, and it was a fun one. It was. You know, it wasn't the action-packed fight for 25 minutes like AK just alluded to, but I was on the edge of my seat. I was waiting for a big shot to land pretty much the entire time, and, you know, sometimes it came, sometimes it didn't, but props to Darren Till, man. That guy got kicked in the leg so many times, and he just kept a straight face the whole time or smiled, which is just wild to me, but it was a great fight at 185 pounds. It wasn't an A-plus main event, but it was pretty darn good. Jose, what'd you think?
Yeah, I absolutely love this fight. It was just a high-level technical violent chess match, and that kind of it's become a trend in with these type of fights, especially in the middleweight division. Like it's similar to what you just said. Like you're just waiting for this one big punch to land. You know it might not happen, but the fact that the threat is there makes it that much more exciting. That every single punch, every single kick, every single dodge could hold like deadly implications. Similar to when Israel Adesanya fought Anderson Silva, I kind of got that same sense where I was just waiting on the edge of my seat for something to happen. But that's how every Darren Till fight is, and Robert Whittaker is no different. His fights against Joel Romero were very violent, of course, and then his fight against Israel Adesanya was like that. It was a lot of back and forth until Israel Adesanya took advantage of those openings before he unloaded with that left hook. So yeah, I absolutely love this fight. It wasn't the barn burner epic back and forth war that I'm sure people were expecting from two top middleweights, but I think that just shows how talented these two fighters are, that they're so skilled. And they have to make adjustments on the fly, and they have to adjust based on the adjustments put in front of them. So I absolutely love this fight. I personally gave it an A just because I love these weird high-level technical chess matches.
Casey, I'm going to throw this one to you because I feel like between the three of us, we've had this conversation a bunch of times on what could happen next depending on who won the fight. Now, if Darren Till had won that fight, I still believed that he would fight the winner of Adesanya and Costa. Whittaker is now in an interesting spot right now because he just fought Adesanya, he got knocked out, and now Adesanya is about to fight Costa. So, in your opinion, is Robert Whittaker the biggest Paulo Costa fan in the world right now, or is he still another win away before getting back to a title fight?
No, I don't really think Whittaker's his career path really depends very much on what happens in Adesanya Costa. To me, I think the big winner tonight was actually Costa, because now imagine if Whittaker had knocked out Till the first round, or Till had knocked out Whittaker. I mean, remember that fight isn't official. Nothing is official. And I could have totally seen if Whittaker would have knocked out Till early, that who knows, maybe the UFC kind of sold that contender the right to fight Adesanya for the belt to the lowest bidder, and he can easily go back to Whittaker again, you know, and maybe have that fight in New Zealand, you know, because where they can't have crowds and stuff. So but I think with that type of super close fight, there was a winner, but it wasn't like, oh, this guy is like just needs that title shot next, you know. So I think the big winner was Costa, and for Whittaker, I don't know, actually. I think he's just kind of still there.
I think the biggest winner of the night was Jared Cannonier, honestly. I think he probably gets the winner at this point.
I haven't heard his name in forever, man.
But the timing of his injury, his recovery, it actually works out really good here because, you know, both of these contracts are signed, by the way, for September. The UFC may not have made it official, but both guys have signed the contract. That fight is going down in September. Just the UFC hasn't officially announced it yet because they want to make us wait because they got out scooped. That's what happens at the UFC from time to time. But Whitaker versus Hermanson sounds good to me. I thought Jack laid it out pretty good last week, but we'll talk more about that on to the next one, the podcast episode 2 coming out on Monday. But co-main event, great fight between Mauricio Shogun-Hua and Antonio Rogério Nogueira. Those two guys beat the living hell out of each other. In the end, Shogun gets the nod via split decision. He moves to 3-0 in the series, and Little Nog rides off into the sunset. Jose, you were probably more excited for this fight than anybody on planet Earth. Your thoughts on the co-main event?
Well, my first thought is I'm so disappointed there wasn't a crowd, and I'm disappointed this fight wasn't in a ring, and I'm disappointed this fight didn't have yellow cards, and I'm disappointed this fight wasn't under Pride rules, and I'm disappointed this fight didn't have Pride gloves, and I miss the crazy Pride lady. Those are all of my thoughts. This fight was so fun. This is my fight of the night. I think it lived up to it. I wasn't expecting this high-level technical masterpiece. I was expecting two fighters whose bodies are clearly just ravaged from not just fights and years of fighting, but years of wars, years of some of the best fights we have ever seen. So this is a fight where experience has to play a factor. Like, yes, your body may be hurting. Yes, your knees are falling apart. Your hands hurt. Your head hurts. And you have to adjust on the fly and use that veteran wherewithal. Like, you can't really do that against a fighter. Like when Antonio Nogueira fought Rumble Johnson or Shogun fights Anthony Smith, where it's these fighters that are just physically quicker, faster, stronger, younger. Their bodies haven't been through the ringer, and they just succumb to youth. These were two veterans that had to rely on veteran wherewithal, and it showed it. This was a MMA fight, and it was pretty much how the first two fights played. Like, if you just told me, if you show me this fight and they weren't wearing Reebok, and you could have told me this was the second fight, I would be like, yeah, that makes sense. This looks just like it. So I really like this fight. It's obviously neither, and Little Nog is riding off into the sunset. We'll never see Nogueira brothers fight in MMA ever again in Shogun. I don't know what's next for him. I haven't even looked at the rankings yet. The light heavyweight division, as Dean Thomas says, is shallow, because he says everyone is afraid to call it that, so I'll call it that. The UFC light heavyweight division is very shallow. I don't know what's next for him. I haven't looked at the rankings, but really happy that both guys got the fight they wanted. But you have to feel for Little Nog going out on, because everyone keeps thinking this was a 1-1 trilogy. He's 0-3 against Shogun right now, so let's not forget about that. So all respect to Little Nog. I was doing the Twitter reactions for the site, and it was universal praise for that fight, specifically for Little Nog, who's going out on his shield. So yeah, props to both Brazilian icons.
Ah, there's the media scores. Pretty split.
It was very split. I would say I didn't think either man just straight up
9-8
barreled over the other guy. I didn't have an issue with either man winning. I don't really know. I can't remember how I scored it. I wasn't really watching it like that. I was just kind of watching as a fan of mixed martial arts. So at the end of it, I didn't really have an issue one way or another, but Shogun got it in the end.
AK, true or false? Because Jose mentioned not having this fight in front of a crowd, but true or false, this was the loudest empty arena fight of all of them so far.
Nogueira's team, I believe it was Nogueira's team, was jazzed up. He would land, he would throw anything hard or land anything, and they were just like, yeah, you're doing great. And hey, I don't blame him. Like I said, if this is the last time he's going to fight, you got to be all in there for your boy. You can't just treat it like any other fight. That's what's so cool about it. I do want to ask Jose. So, Jose, let's say fast forward 17 months, Ryzen year-end show, 2021 year-end show, Shogun Nogueira for it. You're all for it? Just have at it?
I don't want – So I laid this out on Twitter. I just want Shogun to go out there and just close out all of his rivalries. Like, he can go to Bellator. He can throw down with Rampage. He can throw down with Machida. Yeah. Bring both guys over there again. Go over to Bellator, throw down with Vanderlei for all I care. I don't care what Mauricio Shogun-Hua does. He can do whatever he wants at this point in his career. If he wants to win the big one again, stay in the UFC. I don't think he'll ever win it. But if he wants to fight his way back up, all power to him. But at this point in my career, at this point in his career, I want to see him just finish up all of his rivalries and trilogies and rematches that we've been calling for a long time.
Yeah, I believe he said what's most important to him right now is he does want to fight. I think it was an interview with Yohawani that he said he does want to fight one more time in front of people, which makes sense, because as great as this fight was, and I'm sure he knows people are watching, there's nothing that quite captures that vibe, right? So Yeah, I agree. Whatever he wants to do next, and I do hope. I don't know how many more fights it's going to take. Maybe he can wait until next year. Who knows? But because it does feel like it's going to be a while. And when he says a crowd, does he mean like a full capacity crowd, or kind of, you know, who knows how the world will look from now if we have partial crowds, which I know the UFC doesn't want to do. So. I do hope he gets to fight in front of a full crowd before he's done. But again, that could be a year from now if that's the case.
Casey, you're rocking a Pride shirt. What do you think? What did you think of that fight? That was fun.
Better than expected. It could have been 15 minutes of two old guys, but it was 15 minutes of two old guys beating the crap out of each other. So no complaints here. I did have Shogun winning, but I don't really think that mattered other than Nogueira's paycheck. That sucks for him. But outside of Nogueira not getting that extra money, I thought it was a great trilogy, and it's one of those trilogies. I don't think anyone actually cares that it's Shogun 3-0 because every single fight was competitive and very fun. And it does kind of suck for that fight to kind of end in some airplane hangar on a beach in Abu Dhabi. So that's the time we live in. But yeah, I wore the shirt.
I don't know what Shogun goes like. I just looked at the top 15 of light heavyweight. Don't really care to see him fight anyone there. Don't want to see him fight Jiří Prochazka. Don't want to see him fight Corey Anderson. Don't want to see him fight Johnny Walker. I want to see him fight a lot of guys that aren't in the UFC, like the Machidas and the Rampages. And if Rashad Evans wants to come out of retirement, like we never got Shogun Rashad Rampage. Like imagine if he got Chael Sonnen to come out of retirement to run that back. Like. There's a lot of fights I want to see, but none of them happen to be in the UFC.
Shogun Rampage, that sounds good. And you know what? But piggyback what Jose said. Like a couple minutes into this fight, I was like, oh, they're really hitting each other hard. But the whole time, I was like, this would be so much cooler in a ring. I was just thinking the whole time. So much.
That's what I'm saying.
They could have brought a ring and chest for this fight. Come on, guys. Honestly. Dana, come on. Think outside the box.
I can't believe you guys are forgetting Paul Craig, all right? Unfinished business. You talk about wrapping up his rivalries.
I was going to say that.
Come on, Paul Craig, run it back.
I was surprised they didn't rebook that fight, but I'm not going to complain. I wanted the little nug fight. Unless I can just imagine the UFC bring OSP back down to light heavyweight because they keep trying to rebook that. They keep trying to rebook that rematch, and that rematch keeps falling apart.
You know it'd be fun? And I threw this out for Bukowskis last week, but that was silly now I think about it. Gokhan Saki, Shogun. How about that?
Oh, my God. I would be so into that.
Let's go.
I would be so into that.
I want to see Gokhan fight again. I just want to see him fight
in
again.
In a ring.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have to tell Bukowskis you reneged on that, AK.
Sorry.
He got a little fired up when I told him about that one. He liked that. He liked that idea.
I like it.
Sorry, Modestus.
Sorry, buddy. again, we're here talking to you guys. So if you guys got questions, comments, thoughts on whatever, we'll get to all of those in just a minute, but we have to talk about the chaos that ensued before that. In the heavyweight division, Fabricio Werdum entered the final fight of his deal, and good Lord, did he set himself up for free agency in a big way. Submits Alexander Gustafsson in the first round. Looks like his UFC run is over. What did you think, AK? I mean, especially after this last performance against Alexei Oleinik, he didn't look great. There wasn't a ton of faith in Mr. Werdum tonight, but he looked pretty darn good tonight, did he not?
Why do we even bother predicting fights? I hate anyone who's seen my predictions on the site. They're just a weekly disaster. I'll kind of paraphrase a tweet I sent out earlier. So I have this, you know, I have a classic AK Lee move in my predictions where I'll explain very clearly why someone's going to win, and then for almost no discernible reason, pick the other person. So that very much happened here. I wrote, "Hey, Alexander Gustafsson, welcome to the heavyweight division. Your first test coming off a submission loss, a former UFC champion with one of the deadliest ground games in MMA. Have fun." You know, so very, very sarcastically saying that I think he's going to have a very difficult fight. And then somewhere in there's some word salad explaining why I think Gustafsson has a chance. And then I ended with Gustafsson by decision. My pick is Gustafsson. So Werdum looked great. Let me put it that way. Coming off that Oleinik fight, I had no idea what to expect. I thought Gus, it was a great candidate to move up to heavyweight. People have said that for years, that it should be an option for him. And the worst case scenario happened. It went to the ground. Werdum is still one of the best ever in MMA down there, and he got the armbar. So I don't want to give up on Gus as a fighter yet. I'd rather, you know, lavish more praise upon Werdum looking more focused in his last fight with the UFC and getting back to his specialty and doing what he does best.
Agreed. Jose, what did you think of Werdum's final ride, I guess, here in the UFC?
Well, I said when we did the preview show that when you described this fight as chaos, I viewed chaos as I just don't know how this fight is going to play out. This could have been 15 minutes of nothing like we saw in Jacksonville, or it could just be one guy tearing through the other person. We just didn't know. It just happened to play out, and that Verdum just decided to come in better shape than he was in his last fight, and then shows jiu-jitsu and just tear off for Alan Augustin's arm. Now Augustin's on a 3-fight losing streak, 0-1 in his new division. So yeah, you said it yourself. Verdum setting himself up for a big free agency run. I doubt he comes back to the UFC, which is a bummer because I think a lot of the fights I want to see him throw down are in the UFC. But he had a good win. It just doesn't really matter for the UFC rankings right now, if it mattered at all, because one of them is leaving and one of them will probably go back down to light heavyweight.
Casey, is the answer here Fabricio Verdum versus Fedor and Bellator? We run this thing back. Oh, he's shaking his head.
Nope.
What is it?
Nope. Ryan Bader versus Verdum for the title.
It's going to be Bader, and if it's not Bader, it's Brandon Vera in one championship. It's one of those two.
Yeah. Speaking of Bellator, our own Damian Martin just dropped a lovely tweet saying, it will never happen, but if the UFC and Bellator ever want to co-promote Shogun versus Fedor to determine the King of Pride FC, tell me you wouldn't watch. So
I want to see
just
it.
Just to go back to our...
I would do it.
Yeah,
but I'll watch Fedor... But I'll watch Fedor fight anybody, and I'll be excited.
Same as Shogun.
No, but that is the second. I'm sorry.
That could have been the answer to the final between the links question last week, so we can make that fight happen.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about that. Moving on. That's.
Go ahead, Casey.
No, that was a good suggestion though. Fedor versus Verdum, a rematch. If somehow the Bader Verdum fight doesn't get made, Fedor Verdum is the fight to make though. And that'll be an awesome fight. Hopefully in Japan. We'll see.
Yeah. Carlos Sparza gets another split decision win over Marina Rodriguez. That was a fun fight.
It was.
Marina needs to get her takedown defense, situated, or it's gonna be a long road because she is so talented on the feet and even off her back throwing those elbows. She had her moments, but Carla's just a dog. She looked great, yeah, down the stretch.
I mean, Marina, I think the thing is, I think, her and her team are going to have to decide whether they want to make her, play to her strengths that she has, because she has those long limbs. She's very aggressive from the bottom, very fun to watch from bottom position. But as we know, in MMA, the way the unified rules are, it's just never going to favor you in that situation. So they have to decide whether they want to encourage that or kind of just improve her defense, her ability to get out, her ability to neutralize, her opponent's offense, which she did at times. But, you could see she couldn't help, because she was having some success from bottom and she couldn't help it. I think this is why if there is any controversy, it's the scoring. It's the scoring on strikes. I'd like to see the scoring numbers after, because it did feel like Rodriguez was doing a lot of damage from the bottom. I'm sure the people who thought Rodriguez won, I'm okay with the 29-28 Esparza score, but I can understand why it was received. The media scores there are very split.
The 9-9?
It's pretty split. It's pretty. It might not be 100% split, but it's within range. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
I scored it for Rodriguez.
I scored it for Carla, but like no confidence whatsoever.
Yeah. I think 30-27 Sparza is crazy. I can't. One of the judges.
That's so weird to me.
Through these media members.
One for MMA Brazil. MMA Brazil. They must really, man. They do not like Rodriguez.
Yeah, there's a story there.
And MMA Mania. I don't trust those guys. That's not a real site.
A good win for her. I think her and Amanda Ribas, I think that just books itself at this point. I know she called for Claudia Gadelha, but Gadelha's got a fight coming up in September.
Or a title fight, like Dana White said. Dana said that Rose probably isn't going to be ready because she's physically beat up and her eye blew up. Tatiana Suarez is still hurt. So he basically said the winner of this fight could get a title shot or Joanna could get a rematch. So if Carla wants, imagine if Carla gets a title shot on the next Fight Island card. I mean, who's going to, like, if you look at the rankings, people are either tied up, hurt, pregnant, or have fights. So if Carla's the next one in line, then so be it.
Yeah, and people can say what they want about it. Oh, it's going to be a mismatch or whatever. But Look, I just want to see champs stay busy. I just want to see the champs cook sometimes. When did it come? Like, of course we want every championship fight to be like as close equal as possible, like an epic fight. But that's not how prize fighting works, people. Prize fighting is filled with entertaining blowouts. I'm sorry. So if you think and that's no disrespect to Esparza. If you think Esparza is a good competitor, guess what? Then that's an appealing fight. If you're on the totally other side of it and think Zhang Weili is just gonna blow out of the water, you should look forward to that too. I mean, that was part of Mike Tyson's appeal when he was a big star. They didn't care about I really hope this guy challenges Tyson. No, if you want to see Tyson take someone out in like 50 seconds. So Zhang Weili should be built up the same way. I know she wants. We all don't think she wants to stay busy. So yeah, that's why it's a good reason to book Esparza. Those were her fourth straight win. She has a former champion. She's fought some very tough competition. I think she absolutely deserves a title shot.
Yeah, and then you get fights like John Jones and Thiago Santos or John Jones and Dominic Reyes where you have such a dominant champion, and then they get like, oh, next body up, and then the fight turns out to be awesome. And there's a lot of controversy, a lot to talk about. So Carlos Bennen was the inaugural champion. People seem to think Joanna was the first champion ever just because Carlos first title defense, she got the brakes blown out of her after she submitted Rose on the Ultimate Fighter finale. So if Carla gets a title shot, I don't really care. Of course, there are fights I would rather see, but if she's the next woman up, so be it.
Do you remember
how they're going to do the rematch?
Rose was a giant underdog. I'm sorry, Carla was a big underdog. Carla was a big underdog when she fought Rose.
I knew what you meant.
Yeah.
It's because Dana basically was pegging Rose to be the next Ronda Rousey right out of the gate. But Carla was the invicted champion going, and she was the number one seed in that tournament. Mm-hmm. Like she won that tournament with ease and then just got fed to Ioana Jędrzejczyk, who was probably an underdog too, coming off that narrow fight against Claudia. So, but she's fought in pretty much everyone in the division outside of Weili and outside of Weili. So. I have no issues if they want to give her the title shot. Of course, I'd rather see Rose. Of course, I'd rather see Tatiana. But if they're tied up, Carla's the next woman.
All right.
I personally don't think Carla deserves a title shot because I really, 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 really want to see Joanna versus Carla too. I want to see that rematch. I want to see this new Carla. Because remember, people forget that Carla, all her fights were in Invicta. Then she fought in the house. Then she fought in the Palms, and then her next fight, and this is all in the span of like 6-9 months, her next fight was in a sold out arena in I think Dallas in front of 15,000 people on a big pay-per-view. It was just, I get it, it was a big jump, and she looked like that. I wouldn't pick Carla to beat Joanna, but I predict a much more competitive fight, and I think Carla deserves that rematch too.
I'd like to see that one again. I don't know how excited she would be for that one, because that one took a lot out of her. Like, she didn't even want to talk about it. I don't even know if she still really addressed that fight all these years later, but that one took a lot out of her. I know that for a fact. But I think the road to a title is through Joanna. But if Rose isn't ready and Tatiana's not ready, you can't really book that fight right now, especially if you want to get Zhang Weili going and defending her title once again. So we'll see what happens there.
Unless they run it back with Joanna.
That's what I think they're going to do. It's so easy to sell.
And then Carla, I don't have an issue with Carla and Amanda Ribas either.
Yeah. So there you go. I think we've laid that out pretty well. But who
moral of the story is we all agree strawweight is far and away the most competitive women's division out there.
Oh God, that's not even close.
I love it.
Paul Craig gets another triangle choke submission win. Alex Oliveira gets a winner of Peter Sabata, but we got to talk about Chimaev. Good God Almighty. True or false, and this is an open question for everybody, is Khamzat Chimaev the MVP of Fight Island?
He's the breakout star, for sure. If there was one guy that, how many fights were on Fight Island? Like 6,000? If there's one fighter I'm going to remember who I didn't know anything about coming into Fight Island, it's that guy. Like, I kept asking Esther, okay, how do you say his name again? Because I'm going to have to say his name a lot, I feel like, pretty soon.
And what's interesting is Yahoo Sports' Kevin Ioli tweeted out that he spoke with Dana White, and Dana White wants to book Chimaev at UFC 252. He wants to turn him around again and put him on that card on August 15th.
If they can get the visas.
Wild.
If the travel visas are good to go, then strike while the iron's hot. I love that guy.
He hasn't taken any damage.
No.
I think zero strikes absorbed.
I think John Phillips glanced.
I think the final numbers on the Phillips fight was like 119-4 or something crazy.
I hear he stubbed his toe on the way out of the cage. Yeah. And like it was bad. It's like his pinky nail kind of bent backward a little bit. It was gruesome, and yeah, so I think that was all the damage Chimaev took this weekend.
He's pretty confident too. This guy is not like a wilting flower or anything when it comes to the interviews. I think he said so. The English was a little rough, but he did do the interview in English. Credit to him. And he said like, "Oh, if I can fight, if anyone in the next hour, if anyone in the next hour gets injured, yeah, put me back in. I'm ready to go. I want to fight again. I'll smash everyone. I'll smash anyone at 170 or 185. I want multiple titles." He made some good use of his promo time today. So. I have to rein in the parade a little bit in a second, but I'll let you guys keep if you want to throw any more Chimaev praise out there before I play a little Buzz Killington.
In the scrum, he said that he thinks MMA is too easy. That's what he said in the scrum. That's like so it. Crazy.
I like that.
But
guy.
Here's
like
the it. Thing. Well, we have guys like this, all right? So a lot of times we talk about like with Hibas and some of the other stars, we like to slow roll them a little bit. Not with this guy. Throw him to the wolves. I want to see if he can sink or swim. I mean, if you're coming out and you're saying that you think MMA is too easy, that you're ready to smash everybody at this point, that you are ready to become the pound for pound best fighter in the UFC, I think he's ready for a top 15 guy right now. I really do.
Absolutely.
Throw him to the wolves. Let's go.
I tweeted, I want to see him face a top 15 guy. I want him to face Anthony Pettis, who's a top 15 guy, former title holder. He was a top 5 welterweight until very recently. And seriously, I must have got like 90 replies going, "Why do you hate Anthony Pettis? What did Anthony Pettis do to you?" You know, I was like, people are like, I don't know. Like, who, they want him to go a title shot? I don't know what they want. I mean, because essentially, Chimaev beat, he beat two UFC welterweights, one middleweight, one welterweight. But he beat two guys.
Reese McKee is a lightweight.
Oh, he's a lightweight? Yeah. Okay.
Reese McKee is not essentially a lightweight.
Okay. Yeah. So he still hasn't beaten a UFC veteran.
He hasn't beaten a welterweight yet.
He hasn't beaten a welterweight yet.
He beat a middleweight and he beat a lightweight. I think, honestly, I think they're going to book him and Cerrone. That's what I think they're going to end up doing. Because Cerrone's got a fight booked. From all indications, there's no opponent yet as far as that's concerned. But he's scheduled to fight at some point. I would not be surprised to see, especially with Chimaev saying that Cerrone would be, quote, easy money. I think you got something there. And then we'll see what happens. And
I think
you're shaking your head, Jose. Big time.
Go ahead, Jose.
It's like, I like the fight, but god damn, Donald Cerrone just sometimes needs to call. Like, it just reminds me of when he's like, "Yeah, I'll fight Darren Till. He's massive. He's a welterweight. I'll fight him overseas," and then he just gets crushed. Or like the Leon Edwards fights. I'm like, Donald, at this point in your career, you can get big name fights. You have to fight young wood chippers all the time. But I like the fight, but Donald Cerrone never gets easy fights. I would still favor him in that fight, but Chimaev is a monster. So if he just tore through him, it wouldn't surprise me. What is he like? 8-0, 7-0. You'd have a 7. You have an 8-0 fighter fighting Donald Cerrone, who has more fights in a month than he has in his career.
I don't know. Chimaev has had more fights this week than Donald Cerrone has. So,
it's true.
That's true.
Wild. Well, technically, I've had more fights than Donald Cerrone this month.
He's also, Chimaev is the rare prospect who, if you just glance at the records of his opponents, he was running through people and actually facing more experienced opponents than him. But most of the guys we see come to the UFC like 8-0, 9-0, 10-0. You look at their record and they're kind of just having to get whoever they can get. And you'll see like in their like seventh pro fight, they fought a guy who's like 0-3. And you're like, how did that happen? And that's just kind of how it is before, you know, you get to the major leagues. Chimaev was fighting for Brave Combat Federation, very, very, credible promotion. And he fought, I'm going to struggle with his name, Mzwandile Klangwa. And who was undefeated at the time. And then he fought an 8-0 guy before that, an 8-3 guy in his fourth pro fight. So the resume looks good. It's certainly less padded than most prospects. Now, I will rein in the parade. John Phillips and Reese McKee are not exactly the strongest wrestlers.
They're not.
Put it kindly, Phillips has no ground game whatsoever. And I'm just going to be harsh there. McKee isn't quite as bad, but I certainly not someone I would consider to be as strong, especially at the UFC level. So you took guys who their weaknesses are grappling, you put them in there with a guy who is clearly, in Chimaev, an elite, the elite of the elite at wrestling. So I would want to see him face a solid wrestler outside of the top 15 first. I know that's so lame, but I'm I think Chimaev is great, and I think he's a future champion. I need to see him face someone with some takedown defense first.
Those guys have takedown defense. They're just not known for their wrestling. The fact, and like, and
John Phillips does not. That's a last.
No. You don't get this far with no wrestling. But the fact that destroyed these guys, like it was like their first day on the mat. And I think that's why we're so excited about him. And of course, you know, he talks. He has that little broken English that kind of is fun to listen to. It's fun and violent. It's cute.
He's a terrifying man.
Yes, that's what I'm looking for here.
No doubt about that. So, well, obviously, huge Fight Island trip for that guy. Massive. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's next for him.
Yes.
Francisco Trinaldo with a nasty knockout. If we're talking about MVPs of the night, I think the LVP, the least valuable player, is probably Herb Dean for letting a couple of these fights go on a little too long. Jesse Rodso with the nice win. Tom Aspinall with a good finish. How about Mavzar Evloev? AK, I know you are excited about this guy. I think you might be more excited about him than Chimaev.
No,
if we're being honest.
I don't think anyone's more excited about Chimaev than I do think. I don't think Evloev is going to get pushed as hard. Maybe that's why I'm a little less critical of him. He looked great. I mean, Grundy is just an awesome, awesome wrestler. And Evloev, you know, that's just sort of the question. Can he keep a guy like that off him? And he got stronger as the fight went on. He wore Grundy out. Grundy was going for takedowns all throughout the fight up until the end of the fight. And Evloev, so calm, knew exactly when to start opening up with the striking. You know, he realized, okay, this guy cannot hold me down, cannot keep me down. I'm just gonna open up. And he looked great. Yeah, I picked Grundy, so I was very pleasantly surprised with Evloev. He's absolutely a top flight prospect.
I liked his call out of Arnold Allen after the fact as well. That's a great call out. I don't know if they're going to book that fight, but that's a great fight.
Where's Arnold Allen been? I feel like he just kind of disappeared. I haven't heard his name. It's just, you're just waiting
it's
to
a
get
pandemic,
a fight.
Casey.
Is that, we're in a pandemic. We're in a pandemic.
We're in a pandemic, dude.
I'm waiting for that guy. I love Arnold Allen.
I think
he fought in January, and then I don't know what since.
Yeah.
Tanner Bozier. Very nice performance against Pessoa. Finished him second round. I think that was the one fight I called like right on the dot with our picks. He wants Maurice Greene. I think the timing works out great. Maurice Greene went away till the fall, so now you can book that one maybe in October. I'm down for that one. Pani Kianzad gets a win. Ramazan Ameev did what Ramazan Ameev does. Got a decision win, and then Nathaniel Wood against John Castaneda. That was a lot of fun. Wood gets the decision, but Castaneda, pretty good showing for his UFC debut. Overall, Nathaniel Woods has got those like Tony Delk arms, if you're a basketball fan, where it's like if he just hangs his arms down, they're like down to his shins. That right hand of his, it's like a piston, and he could throw that thing go-go gadget style from anywhere in that octagon. So he looks great in 15 fights, man. Pretty good pacing. I'm happy for it. So what do we think? I'm still waiting for bonuses. I haven't heard anything on the bonuses yet. And I guess Dave Shaw is at the podium right now. So what a good... Yeah, good for Dave Shaw.
Can we do quick predictions on bonuses? What do we think we got?
Ooh.
Chimaev, probably getting three bonuses. Main event, probably get fight of the night.
I think Co-Main
gets fight of the night.
I think it'll be... If Verdum wasn't a free agent, they'd probably give it to Verdum.
Oh, yeah, he's not getting it.
It'd be Kazmat. Trinaldo missed weight, so he can't win.
Shouldn't, no.
Craig might get it.
Bozer,
Chimaev.
Tom Aspinall's KO was pretty good.
I don't know.
Good.
Paul Craig got his third triangle choke from the bottom. Like, why don't you give it to him, you know? I'd say Craig. Go ahead.
You go ahead, sir. You.
I'd say Shogun Nog, fight of the night, and then Craig and Chimaev, performance of the night.
Yeah, that's mine too. That's my prediction. And they very rarely go who I think should get it, so.
Yeah, the co-main event should get the fight of the night. Let me just throw that out there.
Yes,
respect.
I don't think it will get the fight of the night, though. I think the UFC will throw a curveball and give it to the main event.
Right.
Not my pick. but Chimaev's definitely getting a bonus. There's no doubt about that. And then it comes down to who gets the other one. I think Craig's probably a good maybe Jesse Ronson. What a story that was.
Oh, right. My fellow Canadian. How can I forget? A lot of Canadian content today. Him and Bozer.
15 fights on this card, guys. It's hard to remember. Sorry.
It's a lot.
I know.
Oh, we have bonuses. There are six bonuses.
Oh, we might all be right.
No official UC suite.
Okay.
Tanner Bowser, Tom Aspinall, Jesse Ronson, Shemaev Craig, and Verdum. So no fight of the night.
So pretty much just if you got a stoppage win, you got a bonus.
Wow.
Yes. I hope they also give a fight of the night bonus to the co-main events.
I guess not.
No, it's six performance bonuses. Crazy? What are they made of money? AK? Yeah. It's a pandemic.
Look, man, when you're in Abu Dhabi, you do as the Abu Dhabians do. And let me tell you something, those guys just let the cash flow. So yeah, good for all. Oh, my two Canadian boys got cash in. Aspinall, who I was trying to say, you guys all forgot about Tom Aspinall. Hell of a debut, 45-second knockout for him. So cool. That's cool. Six bonuses. I hope this sets a precedent that they can give more bonuses in the future.
Jake Collier is a heavyweight. I just was like, oh God, this guy is in such trouble.
They didn't give out more bonuses, AK. They gave out the same amount of bonuses. They just didn't do Fight of the Night.
No, they gave six bonuses.
Oh, six. Oh,
yeah. So instead, pretty much,
if you got a stoppage win, you got a bonus.
Unless your name was. Oh no, they did give for. They did. Oh, there you go. That was very respectful.
The only one that didn't get a bonus was Trinaldo, who missed weight.
Huh.
That was a terrifying knockout too.
That was rough. Was that a TKO or a KO?
It was ruled a TKO, but that's a knockout.
Should have been a KO.
That's a knockout by any other name.
100%.
Yeah. Finger of shame, Herb Dean. Herb Dean, nothing but the greatest respect for Herb for some of his previous work with the UFC. I mean, he's been at the center of some of the most memorable fights the fans have seen. But it really feels like he's lost his fastball over the last five. I don't even know how many years you want to go back. I mean, it's not even he's consistent. It's not even like consistently late. Sometimes he's way too early. Sometimes he's way too late. It's dangerous for the fighters. It's horrible for the fans. It's horrible for the fighters as well as far as them wanting to get their work in. So. Yeah, that was really bad. I've seen, of course, it's the internet. You'll see some people arguing, "Oh, it was fine. He waited to see if the guy's going to defend himself." No, the guy was like sideways. His hands were up like this. That's not intelligent defense. Herb is an expert. He's up there closer than any of us, and it's his job to know that the fight's over. So, finger shame, Herb. I don't know what's going on, but again, he's either going to have to go back to school or move on, or no, honestly,
go back to school.
Go back to John McCarthy reffing school because. Nothing but respect for the guy. Again, the guy's forgotten more about MMA than I'll ever know, for sure. But if anyone can't see that there's an issue with his officiating at this point, I don't know. You really got to examine that.
Oh, you just got an update. Herb Dean has just stopped the fight. he just right now.
I'm looking at the scorecards came in for Whitaker versus Till. Two of the judges were on the same page. Whitaker got rounds 2, 3, and 5.
That's how I scored it.
Yeah.
Till got the knockdown. That's right. Till got the knockdown in the first round.
But yeah, this
is how I wrote. I scored it. I had 10-9 Till in the first, and then Whitaker taking 2 10-9s and 3 and 4. I mean 2 and 3. And then I just wrote a question mark for round 4 because that
good
was
good judge.
That was such a close round. And then I had Whitaker taking 5. So in the end, I just decided I remembered more of what Whitaker did in round 4 than Till. So I gave him round 4. So I had 3 rounds to 2, Whitaker.
Yeah, so two judges gave Whitaker 2, 3, and 5, and then Anders Olsen gave Whitaker 2, 3, and 4, and gave Till the 5th round in the first round.
Right.
Interesting.
Right.
So 48-47 across the board. There you go. Ben Cartledge, Anders Olsen, and Clemens Werner. That's a judge name right there.
And those were definitions of 10-9 rounds. We all talk about what's a 10-9, what's a 10-8. Let's use all of the 10-point muscles. And I thought those were all perfectly judged 10-9s. No one blew the doors out of someone.
Clemens Werner sounds like, and I'm sure Jose will appreciate this, like a 1920s pitcher for the Chicago White Sox or something like that.
Sure.
Maybe not a pitcher, maybe a third baseman. What do you think?
It's true because Clemens Werner. Yeah, he played shortstop for that team that got
for the Washington
team.
Generals. Yeah. He was the best bunter in the league.
Bunny's a great skill.
What do we say? EK, should we? ECK. There we go. Should we go to the peeps?
Yeah, let's go to the peeps.
This is where we get a potpourri of. all sorts of crazy stuff about coffee and pasta and fights from 3 months now.
I can confidently say I've never thought the phrase potpourri would ever be used in a UFC post-fight show.
There we go. That's from Jeopardy right there.
Welcome to the team, Mike.
John Gooden had the line of the night describing the swelling over Carlos Barza's eye. He said some facial furniture. I'm like, I love it.
I'm a big John Gooden fan.
He's solid. He's so
really
solid.
Really good.
I like Dan Hardy. I've always liked Dan Hardy. I know there's a mileage may vary. I'm a fan.
Dan Hardy is polarizing, isn't he?
Yeah.
I never had an issue with him, but every time he commentates, everyone is either loves him or hates him, and I was always indifferent.
I loved him shouting at Herb Dean. I know that's sure. Some people thought that was unprofessional, but I thought, look, he's human, he's a fighter, and he called it like he saw it. That's all we can ask of guys in the broadcast team, right? So I think he yelled out. What did he yell out right after it happened? Oh, he's out, stop the fight. And then I think there were people saying, and I didn't hear this part.
He said, I'm doing my job, so you do yours.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think Herb Dean said, let me do my job or something. Yeah, let me do my job. And I believe Hardy replied, yeah, I'm doing my job, you do yours. So
there's a phenomenal photo of a phenomenal photo of Dan Hardy yelling at Herb Dean, holding up two fingers or something like that.
What a night. This night had it all. Let's see what the peeps had to say.
Real quick before we go to the questions, did you feel the commentary? Like when I was watching the fight, I had the fight up for grabs until basically that last minute of the fifth round, when Whitaker finally kind of got not side control, but he kind of had control of Till in the cage. And I was like, okay, I got to give it to Whitaker now. But like, I felt like the commentators were kind of, I don't know, they were overselling Whitaker, and what did you feel like? Did you feel like they realized it was such a close fight into that fifth round?
I think they have I don't know. I feel like with this empty arena stuff going on, I feel like we've seen that a little bit more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Keeps us on our toes in a weird way that, you know, they're overselling and they get the judging in a different way. And there have been times where I listen to them and I'm like, really? That's how you guys saw it? And I'm pretty much wrong every time, so I don't know why I even say anything, but
I just thought it was interesting. All right, let me get Alex's face up here in a little bit, but let's go to some questions. Talk amongst yourselves.
I'm not on screen. I'm picking my nose right now, right? I'm not on screen. My finger's right up my nose, like right now. I'm not on screen. Oh no, I got it. Oh, God.
All the way up there.
Sorry, guys. Sorry.
Very classy.
Casey, you said I wasn't on screen. What the hell is that? Come on.
Here we go.
Is light heavyweight to heavyweight too big of a jump? We've seen success in lower classes, but not in heavyweight. I would say probably too big of a jump.
Yeah, we had Hurricane Shane Helms on the A side a few weeks ago, and we spoke in depth about this, how we all kind of want a cruiserweight division between heavyweight and light heavyweight, maybe 225, just because you get those massive – it's too much of a disparity, because then you get like Fedor versus – Bigfoot Silva, which is like a 225-pound heavyweight, and Bigfoot Silva, who like cuts down from 300 pounds. So yeah, I really want a cruiserweight division, but I think if they do add a cruiserweight division, that's just another belt for John Jones at this point.
And I think that's why we consider, like guys you mentioned, like Fedor and Daniel Cormier to be such marvels, is because
even Kane.
Sure, and Cain Velasquez, they're so clearly undersized against a lot of their opponents, and yet Fedor, of course, went unbeaten for God knows how long, for, you know, years.
Stipe's not the biggest guy.
No, yeah, see, I wouldn't call Stipe a huge heavyweight either. So when you see the guys succeed against some of these larger fighters, it's actually incredible to watch. So it is a big jump, again, because it can be anywhere. You know, you might be stepping in there and be giving up anywhere from 15 to 40 pounds, who knows, depending what you weighed in at, right? Go ahead, Casey.
I disagree, because it's who you're facing. Like, say when Weidman went up to light heavyweight, he faced Jan, who turns out is a top two.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, two or three guy. Like, he's not facing.
No, he fought right. He fought
Rockhold. Rockhold fought Jan. Yeah.
Oh well, actually, Rockhold and Weidman, both those guys. Same story, you know. But like, I think it's the UFC. If you're fifth ranked at whatever weight class and you go up, you don't fight a fifth-ranked guy in a weight class above. You got to go backwards a bit. And with Gustafsson, What was he ranked in light heavyweight at the time?
Really, top today. Into going into tonight
at 205. What was Gustafson?
Seven. He was seven.
So we're on seven. And Verdun was like he was probably around that. He's like top 10 heavyweight, right?
Still, I actually think going. I think because after the Olenek fight kind of messed things. I actually think he was only. I have him in my note. I believe he was only 14th. Let me just double check. I actually think he was 14th.
That's okay. I think that's just a bad UFC ranking. But I think we. Yeah, I think we can assume that Verdun is still a premier heavyweight. And I think Gustafson. Give Gustafson the guy that one of those heavyweights that lost tonight. I don't even know their names anymore.
Collier.
Yeah, Collier.
Oh no.
Like, does Gustafson beat Collier? And then kind of the storyline's totally different. That's all I'm trying to say. It's like I think it's who they're facing, and not they just can't jump to these elite guys in their first fight. To me.
Yeah, but I think most people picked Gus to win that fight just based on what we saw from Verdum in the last fight. But
I think that's a little recency bias, though.
Yeah, big
yeah,
time.
I mean that's what the sport.
Yeah, that's what the sport is. Yeah. Whoa, MMA.
That's what we do.
Casey, Truck, can I read a question that I see from Javon? I don't know if you have this already queued up.
No, I don't, but is it? Okay. Where is the question?
It is in the YouTube questions, but it might be pushed. I don't know how far
Javon,
down.
Is it the Betch Gohea one?
Yes, if you could get that one up on the screen. Okay, so there it is. Thank you, Javon. So for anyone who didn't see... So the reference to Spike Carlisle, who in his fight with... I'm sorry, who was he fighting again? He fought...
Billy
Quarantillo. Thank you. He seemed to think that the 10-second clapper was the round end, and he just turned his back, and Quarantillo rocked him with a shot, which was hilarious. And then... not for Spike Carlisle. Yeah. And it seemed like Betch Gohea had the same mistake today in her fight with Pani Khansad, where she heard she clearly reacted to the clapper. There's no mistake. She heard the clapper, and you see her immediately stop and turn, start walking to her corner. And Khansad got in more than one shot. She got in like a combination in the last 10 seconds. So my theory was that normally it's so loud. I wonder if some of these fighters don't even hear that clapper. And just kind of react to the, you know, they would actually wait for the final buzzer. So that's why she thought the clapper was the end of the round. Maybe she thought, that's me being generous. I'm not sure. What do you guys think?
It's probably about right.
I think the clapper is more for the referee, just to show that to get close in so when they hear the horn, they can kind of separate them. Because how many times, like, do we see fights where the referee is kind of on the outside looking in because there's so much action, doesn't want to get tangled up? The clapper signifies him that he needs to get closer to the fight to break up the fights once the horn goes on.
So what was Kohea thinking?
I don't know, because there's no excuse, because she's fought for a championship, so she knows how MMA works. So I have no idea, but it's not – you failed to mention, not only did she turn around, she held a fist up to fist bump saying good round and then got punched in the skull. So that's how that's how that moment played out.
I'll just say this, AK. If there was one fighter in the card tonight, and I told you, hey, they thought the 10-second round, they thought the 10-second clapper was the round in, who would you pick?
I'm not answering. I can't. I'm not going to answer. This question.
We don't know the answer. We have no idea. It's just it's hypothetical.
I think Casey sold people Wolf tickets in such a way on Betch Gohea. It's not even funny. I have to say, like, when I was making
she's a Hall
picks,
of Famer.
Like,
she is a Hall of
I'm like,
Famer.
Listen, I'm like Casey's right. Like, she's look at who she's lost to, but she's look who she's beat. You know what? I'm gonna take some chalk on Betch Gohea. What a terrible mistake! That was like picking the guy that Paul Craig submitted. I did the same thing you did, Jose, and I was disgusted by it. Watching how that played out.
Is she one of the 10 best bantamweights in UFC history?
Excuse me?
You talking about Betch?
Is Betch Gohea? I'm just asking. Let's look at, you know, like, now I'm thinking about it. Is she one of
AK,
the 10?
AK, you're grounded. Go home.
I'm just asking. I didn't say either way. I'm asking a question.
It's just a question, man. It's just a question.
I'm asking a question. That's it. I'm just asking a question.
No.
I'm not going to do the math, but I'm just going to, simply no.
I'm a Betch Gohea fan for life.
Go ahead,
She's in Casey's like top three.
Yeah.
Look, it's an aggregate list. I'm saying we all put our list together.
All right, next question.
would Francis start to Verdum, or would Verdum be style poison for Francis? Chuck DLC.
That is what MMA is all about. And that fight's never going to happen, so why talk about it?
I wouldn't like Verdum's chances of getting in there before getting his head knocked off. That and Ganu, man, in the first 30 seconds, maybe the most exciting. If you're just seeing the first 30 seconds of the fight, maybe the most exciting man in all of MMA. And Verdum did look good tonight, though, with that takedown, though, didn't he?
I don't think
that. He looked real good.
I guess let's go Verdum at whatever you thought was the best Verdum we've ever seen. Does that was that prime Verdum beat the Francis we have today?
I don't think we're prime. I'd love to see that fight.
Yeah,
I'd love to see that fight.
I don't know. I have a hard time picking against Francis against
like the Verdum that pieced up Travis. He pieced up. Who did he beat? Travis Brown and
Kane, of course. Beat
Kane.
Yeah, but that wasn't sea level Kane. Let's not forget that.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
that's a good one.
It's an interesting question.
Chuck DLC.
I like it.
That might be the question. That might be tough to beat. That was like last week's trade for Demetrius Johnson question.
Well, watch between the links.
I think, like, looking at off the top of my head, Verdum's last win over like an elite heavyweight, I think, was Kane. Because after that, he's beaten Gus, who I'd still consider a light heavyweight. And who's he beaten? Tabura, Harris, Travis Brown, and Kane. Like, those are his last four wins. And then he's lost to Olenek, Volkov, Overeem, and Stipe. So I consider like Brown, Harris, and Tabura are all great. But if you're talking like top five heavyweights, I think the last one he beat was Kane.
It was a split decision loss against Olenek. It was a close fight, guys. You started.
Yeah, so the win over Overeem, I'm pretty sure, was a majority decision. Yeah. They were both. But what do we talk about? Win is a win. L is an L. He lost.
Prime Verdum, though. That's I'd still pick Ngannou. I think he's a bad matchup for almost everyone except again.
Where's the fight taking place? Because let's also not
small.
No, his two wins over Kane. When he beat Mark Hunt took that fight on like 12 days notice going from Australia to Mexico.
Correct.
And then Kane's like, no, I don't need to go train in Mexico. So I'm going to go down there a week early while Verdum was living there for months at a time. So if this fight is in a small octagon or a huge octagon in Mexico City, maybe. But I'd still favor Francis anywhere else.
Yeah, Francis needs to like breathe on him, and he's going down.
Like, do you remember when Mark Hunt took that fight? He was like IG living videos of him cutting weight in Mexico, like laughing in the middle of the streets. He was going crazy. Like, Mark Hunt was not having a good time.
Who does Darren Till fight next? Jose, I'm gonna throw that to you.
Who does Darren Till fight next? I think we have to wait for these next few middleweight fights to take place because you got Romero and versus Uriah Hall. I'm down to watch Till fight the winner of that. I'm also down to watch Till fight the winner of Shabazzian and Derek Brunson. I'm down to see him fight any of those cats. Like, I think Jack Hermanson should fight Robert Whitaker. Cannonier's healthy. I wouldn't mind seeing Cannonier versus Till, but there's a lot of middleweight fights that happen. So I'm going to say either the winner of Shabazzian, Brunson, or the winner of Uriah Hall and Romero.
I think the winner of Hall and Romero sounds great. Can you imagine Darren Till versus Yoel Romero? And that's – I'm not saying that I'm picking him to beat Uriah Hall. I'm just thinking of just what a poster would look like and just seeing the reactions to people. If MMA Fighting confirmed that Darren Till is fighting Yoel Romero, good God almighty.
Or who was it? Jacques Caracel, if he recovers from COVID anytime soon. He was supposed to fight Uriah Hall down in Jacksonville, so he's obviously should be free at some point. So there's a lot of middleweight fights to make.
Yep.
I'm going to be more specific. I actually think he should fight the Hall-Romero loser, especially if it's Uriah Hall. Actually, now I'm really intrigued by this Till-Hall matchup. So I think if Hall loses, I think that's the fight. That's definitely the fight to make for Till. It would be a weird, memorable striking battle for sure.
But I think the bigger thing to discuss, Till is a legit A-level middleweight.
He looked good tonight.
He looked. I mean, like I thought he was only the fight was still up for grabs until the last minute. You know, opinions vary, but regardless, it was a very close fight until it was extremely competitive the entire time. So I think even with the loss tonight, he's right there still. He's one fight away.
I like the winners of Shabazzian and Brunson. I think they're 8-9, and Darren Till is 5. I'm sure he'll drop to 6. I'm sure he'll drop to 6 or 7, or maybe even stay the same, because I'm sure Kelvin will fall and Hermanson will come up. So I like the winner of Brunson or Shabazzian, because then if Shabazzian wins, which I think he will, Shabazzian and Till, that fight is awesome. And the winner that could still get right out in there for title shot, because those are two guys the UFC wants to get behind.
Until only 27.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, Robert Whittaker's 29.
I know, it's crazy. It's crazy. Whittaker is like
of all these fighters we're talking about, like, Izzy's the oldest at like 30 or 31.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Till's just gonna get better. He's not even, and Whittaker too, like, neither of these guys, I mean, Whittaker's fought Romero twice, so you're gonna lose some, your prime's gonna start a little bit earlier if you go through that. But Till hasn't hit his prime yet.
When you fight Yoel Romero for 10 rounds, you don't use years off your fighting career, you use years off your life. So yes. Like, Whittaker's feeling that, gonna feel that forever.
That's true.
Yeah, I think no matter what happens between Romero and Hall, I think Till Romero is like, that's still the fight. That's
so good.
That's still the fight. I just,
Weidman's coming back to middleweight too. Doesn't he have Akhmadov coming up too? I know that fight won't, if Weidman wins, like, Weidman's still a big name there.
Yeah,
that's a tough fight for him.
Anderson Silva, there you go.
Oh.
Ooh. Till made the right move. I think he moved to middleweight at the right time. I think he's, he, like you said, he could get guys, to, former champions that still have big names that are good style matchups for him. And also that we have these fresh contenders coming up like Shabazzian, right? So he really made a savvy move, especially with how difficult it was to making 170. So you're right. Whatever happens.
I do want to see Till just fight a behemoth of a middleweight, because Kelvin is not the biggest middleweight. People still think he cut to welterweight. And then Till, I mean, let's not forget Robert Whittaker was also welterweight. Darren Till, Mike Perry, where? In the street? I'm in for it.
I mean, that's the only place that fight's happened at this point.
Right? I don't want rules in that fight.
Yeah, that's what's that? Felony fights? Do that in felony fights.
Oh my gosh.
Forgot all
hey,
of that.
I think, you think it's a coincidence they have a backyard as an option to fight in UFC 4?
Till versus Perry is one of those you find that fight like on a DVD at a gas station.
Like, they're fighting over the DVD?
No, you know, you just go to a random truck and that too, a little both.
Yeah,
both.
The DVD is there among the smut. It's like surrounded by smut. Yeah, it's
in the steel grate. You have to dig through to find.
Yeah, right.
It's one of those DVDs you're checking out, like, I got my Monster Energy drink, and you're just waiting in line, and you're like, I guess I'll buy this pack of gum, and you're like, wait, what's this weird DVD of these two people with bad tattoos fighting? I guess I'll buy this too.
$4.99, you can't go wrong with that price. I'll just slip this in my coat.
Is Lil Nog another legend to never become a lineal champion in a major organization?
Wait, is that a question, or?
I wouldn't put Lil Nog top five light heavyweight ever, but he's by far one of the most respected names you'll see in MMA. So I think that means a little, even to the fighters, I bet that means a little more, because I don't think there's a single fighter out there that has anything negative to say about either Nogueira, unless you're Chael Sonnen in the bus story. But we all know that's Chael being Chael. But I wouldn't put Lil Nog top five light heavyweight ever in terms of what he accomplished, but he's by far one of the most respected names.
Agreed. Shall we read off some of these names quickly that Lil Nog has beaten? Guy Metzger, Sakuraba.
What year is this? Tell the year too.
Sorry, this is back in 2002.
2002.
Guy Metzger, Sakuraba in 2003. Overeem, unanimous decision win over Overeem. Pride 29, 2005. Was
it 2 weeks over Overeem?
He has two wins. Yes, a corner stoppage in 06. In between there was an armbar, first round armbar submission of Dan Henderson.
But then he has losses to Sokaju.
Yeah, Sokaju.
Which is still, I think, one of the biggest upsets in the history of MMA.
Sokaju is still getting fights based off that performance.
Well, he also knocked out Arona, right? Like, he went nuts there for like two. What was his run? Yeah, Lil Nog in 23 seconds and Arona in under 2 minutes. So he went nuts for a minute and just had everyone
forget Lil Nog's KO win at Affliction Day of Reckoning. Let's not forget that.
Oh, Edwin was his name? Deweese?
That was at Affliction Ban. So he has two knockout wins in Affliction. Yeah. And then, as Jose mentioned before, later in his career, still doing well. 2011, Tito Ortiz, dominant win over him. And then Rashad Evans in 2013. So an awesome looking resume, really.
I still wouldn't put in top five.
No.
He's an icon for sure.
I don't think the fact that he's not top five. I think the fact that he's been a top, let's call him top 10, a top 15 light heavyweight for almost 20 years?
Yeah.
That's insane. That is insane. He's also, 20 he's years also, at premier light heavyweight.
He's also a guy that he wasn't looking for super fights all the time. He just wanted to throw down. Like Shogun's the same way. Like who's Lil Nas' last fight before Shogun? Was it Ryan Spann? Before that, it was Sam Alvey. And then it was Bader. And who was it? Patrick Cummins he knocked out. So, yeah, he'll fight. He's down to fight whoever. He's not on a Legends tour. He's like, I'm seventh. He's sixth. Let's go.
Yeah.
Soka Drew's last fight, by the way, was for Valor Bare Knuckle, and he fought Mighty Mo and got knocked out.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
What else we got?
Soka Drew.
What's his record? 19-19?
Close. 19-18.
Brazilian Mount Rushmore.
Wow.
I would say Royce Gracie. Silva. Anderson Silva.
Wait. Brazilian Mount Rushmore. Say it right.
Oh, Mount Rushmore.
Thank you.
So Royce Gracie, Anderson. And then this is where it gets tricky because you could have Hickson in there. You could have Jose Aldo. You could have either Nogueira. You could have Big Nog, who's like very iconic and important to the sport. You could have Shogun, Vanderlei. Like, there's Amanda Nunes. Do you want to throw her on the Brazilian mount?
Yeah, she should probably be up there.
Or do you want, like, even Helio Gracie, like the godfather of this all? So it's tough. But I think Hoyce and Anderson are locks. And then right there, it gets 3 through 7 could all be up there.
I got Hoyce, yeah. Anderson, Aldo, and I don't know the fourth one.
I'll go Aldo Nunes just off the top of my head.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
The only reason I wouldn't put some other, like a Helio on there is I would want people just a little bit closer to modern MMA. That's why Hoyce kind of just makes the cut and, of course, hits that level of name recognition, popularity, and then competing against at least some names that that competed close to today. As you said, Anderson for sure.
And then but then there's a lot of Brazilians in Bellator that are phenomenal too. They're obviously not going to be Mount Rushmore, but you gotta at least give them all like the Patricio Pitbull and Lima. You gotta give honorable mentions. They've been incredibly dominant in their promotion.
Yeah. I think Vanderlei would make mine. I think Vanderlei, boy, that popularity and pride.
There was a point in time where Vanderlei Silva was like the most popular fighter on planet Earth.
In the number one like promotion in the world, right?
When pride in the number one in the number one weight class in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to argue that like Vanderlei and Shogun, just because there was a point in time where they were the two hottest fighters in the world in like the most stacked division, if they're over Aldo and Nunes, I wouldn't have an issue. But I think Hoyce and Anderson are the two locks.
Oh, we forgot a big name. Thank you, Jonathan Ram, in the comments. Cyborg.
Oh, yeah.
Not to say she's a better fighter than Nunes necessarily, but is more influential and maybe even more sort of definitely more popular. I mean, I think she's still one of the most popular fighters, not just in Brazil but in the world, right? I think she still is a more popular fighter.
I would agree with that. Yeah,
and so many people still call her like the champ, right? They still for some reason disrespect Nunes still call Cyborg the champ. So yeah, Cyborg. I can't believe we forgot her, but would definitely easily be a candidate for that fourth name.
I think we need two mountains to answer this question.
Oh, for sure.
If we're being honest. Joseph Boza, what about next week? Edmund Shahbazyan versus Derek Brunson. The new main event, as you guys have heard, Irene Aldana tested positive for COVID-19. Her fight with Holly Holm is being postponed. Looks like October could be the lineup for that one. But we got a new main event, 3 rounds, Shahbazyan versus Derek Brunson. And I thought the promo was pretty good. Derek Brunson has said it pretty much hit it right on. He's lost to some tough guys, but when it comes to matching him up with some of the young buck up-and-comers that are trying to make a move, Brunson usually is the guy that's the speed bump, so to speak. So I like the matchup. I think it's perfect matchmaking. I'm excited we finally get to see it because I feel like this fight's been booked for like a year now. But now we're going to see it in a headline spot next week. What do you guys think?
Love it. I love these type of fights. I actually think the small octagon plays in Derek Brunson's favor. I think he has a higher chance of winning with a smaller octagon, but I still favor Shahbazyan. I absolutely love this matchup. I love this fight. Even if these were two unranked fighters, just the fact that I've seen them fight so much and they're so enjoyable to watch. This is, like I said, just a high-level martial arts competition that I'm very much excited for.
It's a good test for Edmund.
Yeah, I mean, you just want to talk about you want to talk about the narrative they're pushing. I mean, some of the names that were brought in that I think people thought were Brunson was like the B-side. Lorenz Larkin, when he came over. I remember Ron Carnero had quite a bit of hype around him. Uriah Hall, of course. Uriah Hall always has a lot of hype behind him. And even Ian Heinisch. I think even Ian Heinisch in his last fight, a lot of us are high on Ian Heinisch. I think he's a future, you know, future top top 10 contender. And and he lost to Brunson. So Brunson has a very good point. His only losses recently, Izzy, Jacare, Anderson Silva, Whitaker. Yoel Romero,
which I think he beat Anderson, and he was like three minutes away from beating Romero.
He beat Anderson Silva.
And like Casey and I interviewed Brunson after his losses to Izzy and Jacare. It was at the Dominance Media Day, and then before his Heinisch fight, he was completely different. He was so different in his mannerisms. He's like, man, I just got to stop worrying about what's next. I just got to focus on winning tomorrow, which to most fighters sounds cliche. But then if you go back and listen to Brunson's old interviews, he's like, after I knock out Whitaker, I'm fighting for a title. And then he goes out there and he just tries to dominate, and he gets his head caved in because he leaves his chin out up in the air. So Derek Brunson is a totally different fighter. And he refers to himself as Mr. Brunson in the promo, which I think is absolutely phenomenal.
He had the gray hair going too, which I dug.
I think it's blonde.
Salt and pepper going on. I like it. Is it blonde, do you think?
Because he was like dying. He was on that Cisco Shelton Benjamin style.
Randleman
style. It's on that grind for a minute.
Is this a better main event than the one that was originally scheduled? Is this more?
It makes more sense. I don't know if it's a better main event. It makes more sense.
I thought this was the most intriguing fight on this card. So. I don't know if I'm the minority there, but
Homa Adana, what's wrong with that? Other than it just didn't make sense. It just didn't make sense as far as a title, because Adana already earned it.
I like that fight a lot, but like Aldana didn't already earned it, and I think Holm shouldn't be near a title shot anytime soon.
Especially against Adana, it just didn't make sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I would favor Holm in that fight too. So like she's risking a title shot that she already earned. It's like Joanne Calderwood. Like I get why she wants to fight, but she's risking a lot to throw down with Jennifer Maia.
Yeah, that's I'm still surprised. Well, I didn't see. What did I saw? She did an interview of Ariel Helwani. What did she? Why did she say she took the fight?
Because Valentina pushed back what they were planning. So, I think they wanted them to fight on a Fight Island card in the early fall. But then I think Valentina said she wouldn't be ready. So Joanne Calderwood just wanted to fight and not wait.
Girls gotta eat. I don't know what to tell you, but
When she fought, she probably could have got a title shot against Joanna, but she wanted to fight on that Glasgow card and then lost. Yeah. JoJo's risky title shot for sure.
It's risky, but yeah. Is Valentina's injury public, or she's just out, or she's been kind of secretive?
I think she said she hurt her knee in the Chukagian fight, and then I don't know. I don't know what type of injury. I just heard injury.
Yeah, she's posting on IG a lot and doing a lot of workouts. She's getting close to 100%, so maybe the end of the year
Sneaky good card, man. Vicente Luque, Randy Brown's gonna be a fun one. Lando Venata, Bobby Green rematch, and this should be fun. Kevin Holland and Trevin Giles. So main card looks good. Preliminary is a little shaky, but Eric Spicely and Marcus Perez could be some weird wild fights. So
yes. Lando versus Bobby Green 2 is next week.
Yeah. That is next week. Yes.
When did that get announced?
like three days.
I think last week. Yeah, 3 days ago.
We said that. I was like, what?
Eric Spicely, Pride of Rhode Island.
Always fun to watch.
Chris Gutierrez, I believe, will remain on that card. Someone said that he has a fight now. I'm not really sure.
He was supposed to be fighting Luke Sanders, but apparently it's not Luke Sanders.
That is not happening.
Okay.
They try to get the kid from LFA, and after talking to his coaches and his team, they said they're going to wait a little bit because he took a lot of leg kicks in the LFA fight, and you don't want to be dealing with Chris Gutierrez when you're favoring the legs already. With the UFC heading back to Vegas, what would you guys add and subtract from the Fight Island format?
What is the Fight Island format?
We talked about this in Between the Links, just like the overall flow of Fight Island, and we didn't find a whole heck of a lot wrong with it.
Or that different from what they usually
do.
Yeah,
my whole thing was like, it was just a big marketing gimmick. It's like, because when I was watching the main event, I was like, oh, this is the final Fight Island fight, and it looks like it's in any other place anywhere in the world. It was just, okay, everything's – I see a couple people in the background. That was it. No, no, I didn't see any palm trees. I didn't see, you know.
Stay curious, Casey.
Hashtag in Abu Dhabi. Hashtag Otter Pops. I got a retweet from Otter Pops. This is awesome. I didn't get on the broadcast.
Still on the broadcast.
I didn't get in the broadcast yet. But me and the social media manager for Otter Pops, we got it. We're good.
Adesanya, I think, with the best one that got on the broadcast. I'm tweeting this just so this gets on TV.
And he got on TV, which is beautiful.
Excellent.
My favorite one they posted was Kevin Aioli's one, and it was like two paragraphs, and it was all like social media stats. I was like, what? Like, it was like taking up half the screen. Like, what is that? Can't win them all.
Let me ask this, because we've seen the UFC run so many cards at this point. What did you guys think of Bellator's fight sphere setup last night?
I dug it.
I mean, it was similar, but they did some things that were a little bit different. I liked what did you think of the boom mic, like the long extended microphone, so that McCarthy could still do the post fight interviews like in the cage?
I think they could have held the mic. I don't think they needed the boom mic. I think they can just held the mic, the other guy, the fighter. But yeah.
I thought it was weird.
You thought it was weird?
I thought it was real weird. I like the UFC with the headset. That's just me though.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed the walkouts. They had the same walkouts. Yeah. The guys were hype coming out. It wasn't just like,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
I liked it all except for the boom mic thing. Like, why do you need to have him stand over there? Just have him go off to the side with the headset.
Mike Goldberg was taking shots of the UFC like all night long too. We do the testing the proper way, the safe way, the correct way, here at Bellator. Okay, yeah. I'm like, oh, all right. I gotta say, the one thing that I really enjoyed, because Bellator normally doesn't do the three-man booth. They usually have McCarthy and Goldie, or you know, McCarthy and Morrow. But I like the addition of Josh Thompson calling the fights last night. I thought he was great. They were giving Goldie shit like so many times, which I really enjoyed too.
When Goldie said Sanhagen had the same body type as Pettis. And like
Anthony, he's like, you said they have the same body type, Mike. Oh well, yeah, you got me. That was great. I like Josh better in that role than in the booth.
Yeah, I thought Josh and John, I think all their work they've done in their own podcast really translated well to the booth. And honestly, I felt Goldie was kind of the one that didn't really fit in.
Goldie should be at the desk.
Yeah, and just read promos and things like that. I felt John and Josh were kind of doing pretty good, just doing color and commentary right there by themselves. But I'm glad you mentioned that. I was very impressed with Josh Thompson.
Yeah, they did what they could with what they had. The main event was fun. You know, Pettis looked great. Rest of the card,
as I was gonna say, of all the fighters this weekend, including Bellator UFC, our social media, the guy got the most terms of like retweets, likes, and everything was Aaron Pico.
Dang. For sure. For real?
Outside of Darren Till and Robert Whitaker.
Yeah, outside that.
Pico dominated our social media in terms of like which tweets performed the best. And I know for a fact a lot of the comments were negative, but it doesn't matter. They're talking about you.
Yeah, that's a scary man.
Why would
that's
you
a
be
scary man if he keeps fighting that way?
We've all talked to Aaron. Like, how could you be negative about him? Like,
he's the most honest guy in the world.
Yeah, like. Yep. Yeah, I just.
Like when we were at the second Dominance MMA, I was like, so there's a couple injuries in the Grand Prix. You want in there? He's like, no, I do not want to fight in the Grand Prix. I was like, don't you want to fight for the title? He goes, it'll happen. I just don't want to be in it. I was like, all right.
Cool. Yeah, he gets it right now. He's learning.
He's an honest young man, and I think we have to understand in our business, honesty is not always the best policy or the most respected, unfortunately. So that may explain some of the animosity towards young Pico.
I tell you what, though, him and Brandon Gibson are going to be an issue for that division. Like the combo of those two, Brandon Gibson holding the mind of Aaron Pico is going to be a problem.
Yep. As I'm watching 5-6 fights a day, I dig that. That's good. We'll do two more, Casey. Do we have two more?
Yeah. Fly down here real quick. Here we go.
Apparently, Darren Till, by the way, said in the in his post fight interview that he's going to need knee surgery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was gonna bring that up, but we didn't. There was no way to bring it up between rounds. He said, "I can't bounce that much after eating." Like that's what he was telling his coach. Yeah. To the point where who I can't remember which commentator was started to whisper. He goes, "I don't want the corner to hear this, so I'm gonna whisper." But Darren still made mention of his right knee being hurt. So like the commentators were even whispering about it, so Whitaker's team couldn't hear it.
Interesting.
So he said, quote, can't bounce on it that much. Also, did anyone notice Darren Till, so he found a lot of success in the first round. We all agree that Darren Till won that first round. Mm-hmm. And then Robert Whitaker made adjustments. Darren Till does all of these movements with his hands, and then right when he's going to throw, he tightens it up and then throws. And I'm like, I can tell every punch he's going to throw now after that first round. And I think Robert Whitaker, he got like when a baseball, you have a pitcher has that tell. Darren Till's toe was very apparent after round two.
Hmm. Those leg kicks definitely made a difference in that fight.
100%.
Like he hit it well in his facials, but clearly the movements and the way he fought the rest of the way.
I wasn't a big fan of was it round two when Robert Whitaker got on top and Darren Till used every single limb to defend instead of like moving. He just like locked up and Robert Whitaker just like powered through and just dropped an elbow. So like Darren Till wasn't moving or defending his head. He just tried to lock him up with all four of his limbs. And then Robert Whitaker just powered through and then crushed him with an elbow. I just Darren Till is an amazing fighter. His tells, I think, were a little too apparent. And off of his back, I think Robert Whitaker was just too much for him on top.
Yeah, I thought Till's takedown defense tonight was awesome.
Yeah, great. He's an unbelievable fighter. I just think Robert Whitaker made the right adjustments, and Darren Till was maybe a step behind after a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. The question I saw from D-Rec was, who do we got in O'Malley versus Cheeto coming up at UFC 252? That's such a great, great, great piece of matchmaking right there.
I'm all in on the Sugar Show. I was skeptical. I'm always skeptical with prospects, but boy, and I know people are saying, oh, he beat Eddie Wineland. Eddie Wineland's not in his prime, but Eddie Wineland is a former world title contender and a very, very good striker.
Former WEC champ.
Right? And O'Malley, man, that knockout was sensational. And his striking really is he has those instincts you just can't teach. Obviously, he's very well learned, but he has those instincts you can't teach. And I think, Cheeto's a perfect opponent. It's going to test his takedown defense, going to test him in a lot of areas. Cheeto's so well-rounded, but it's going to come down to striking, and I think just O'Malley is superior in that category right now.
And I like this matchmaking in the sense that it feels like I thought Cheeto beat Song Yadong in Jackson when I was there. It feels like they're treating this fight as if Cheeto won, which I'm happy with, because I think most people, everyone in the media room, thought when I was there in Jacksonville, thought Cheeto won. So the fact that they're still giving him this big money fight, this high profile fight coming off a loss, I think is great.
My take on it, I'm favoring Sean O'Malley.
So am I.
But he needs to do it in the first 7.5 minutes. Because if that goes midway through the second round, that's when Cheeto becomes Cheeto. And things will get real interesting in the second and third rounds. I do believe that O'Malley has the power and the technique, especially on the feet, to finish the fight early. But Cheeto is tough as nails. And if that fight gets midway through the second round, woo, we're going to have a very interesting last half of that fight, I can tell you that. That's the way I'm looking at it.
I have a feeling we could see McGregor-Poirier all over again with O'Malley winning. I think O'Malley could happen. I think O'Malley is unbelievable, and I think Cheeto is incredible, and I think people are really sleeping on O'Malley's cardio, and I think they're really sleeping on his grappling. Hmm. O'Malley is unbelievable grappler, and his cardio is like that cat runs like 7 to 10 miles a day, just because him moving around is such a big part of his game that he needs cardio. And when I asked him like what about a main event soon, he seemed to get excited about preparing for two more rounds. So I think O'Malley is wired differently too. So I think we could see a replay of McGregor Poirier.
Yeah, this is a different story than the Chimaevs of the world. Like Chimaev's gonna be definitely a breakout 10 days for him, and you get excited about him. But O'Malley, since he was on the Contender Series, we've been waiting for this. You know what I mean? Like, I guess I read this and I don't know if this is a fact, but O'Malley put out these like NBA style like O'Malley custom jerseys that he was selling for $200 a piece, and they sold out in 39 seconds. 39 seconds. This is like WrestleMania 14 at the Garden. That's like sold. Those like sold out in 90 seconds. Those tickets sold out.
He's a popular.
Popular guy right now.
And he did the smart thing of when he had that injury and the USADA suspension and everything, he stayed active on social media. He got really big on Twitch, and now he has all these marketing gigs. He knows what he's worth. He's also an interesting-looking individual. Yeah. Like, as much as we – and he also has a name that, like, a whole country can get behind. Like, he's not Irish, but the last name, like, O'Malley, we have people like Pizzi and Ned McGrath talking like, oh, he's Irish and this and
he
that.
He got his name dropped on the broadcast.
Who?
Ned.
Ned?
Yeah. Gooden mentioned his name. Like,
yeah, I know, because they want to keep him as relevant as possible, so whenever he gets his head cut off, then at least he had some shine.
Jesus. Yeah, O'Malley, the way he announced that fight, too, was brilliant. I'm sitting on the throne. The guy's got it. He's got it. Chimaev versus who next? I think they're going to give him Cerrone. That's my thought. But I don't care. Give him anybody in the top 15. Give him any name whatsoever.
I like either the winner or loser of the Luque Randy Brown fight.
Yeah.
Because Randy Brown's not even ranked. Like when they made the Vicente Luque's like sort of like what, 8, 9, 10 somewhere in there. Winner or loser, I'm down to see him fight that cat.
Randy Brown might be the most underappreciated welterweight in the UFC right now. Everybody sleeps on Randy Brown. Everybody.
I agree.
I have a very random name to throw out that people are not going to like or maybe care about, but I don't know why. It's just jumping out at me from my rankings that I keep. This is a guy who just beat a very respected veteran recently. And keep in mind, again, I'm not of the camp of rushing Chimaev up the rankings. Kamaru Usman. Chimaev versus Miguel Baeza. Yes, I know.
No, I don't like it.
There's a lot of who's, I think, that is going to pop up in the YouTube comments. But I think I don't want to rush Chimaev in. I want to see him built up properly. Cerrone's a fine opponent. I mean, look, they threw Alexander Hernandez in there after, I think he was 2-0 as well.
Yeah.
I think he fought Cerrone. Same idea, right? Same idea. So, and he also had a really hot start, right, to his UFC career. Nope. So I get
What's Gunnar Nelson doing these days?
Nope.
He's not 2-fight losing streak, though. But I think that's a logical matchup.
Nope.
Casey got to say Pettis.
No, I moved on from Pettis.
He's changed his mind?
I moved on from Pettis.
I got to hear this.
We go higher. I'm tired of this though. We don't want to rush these guys. Like screw that. Let's rush these guys. Let's do it. What do we got to lose? Let's see what happens. Chimaev versus Maya. Let's do it.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Maya's ranked number 7 right now, and that's a legit ranking. That's not a BS ranking. That's number 7. And
Maya said.
And now we get that ground. We get to test his ground against someone.
I get it. I think Maya wants. I think this will be Maya's last fight, and I think he should fight Diego Sanchez because he's been calling for that fight for 10 years.
Sure. Hopefully that'll be Diego's last fight as well.
Or you could be you could do Chimaev versus Diego Sanchez, or how about this, AK, Chimaev versus Michel Pereira.
You could have said Michel Pereira or Ryan Hall, and I would have been excited. But yes, Michel Pereira, of course, bring it on.
Just stop. Who cares about experience? Just give Chimaev Carlos Condit and call it a day.
Oh boy. Chimaev versus Michael Chiesa, that may happen down the road. It will not happen anytime soon.
What about Cowboy Oliveira? He won tonight too.
Screw it. No, go to the top. You know, I take that. No Maya. Chimaev versus Tyron Woodley. Why not?
They're gonna book him and Colby first. Nope,
that fight never happened. Chimaev versus Colby.
Jorge,
I want to see him versus the. I don't want to see this slow build anymore. I'm tired of this. The world's. We're not gonna make it to 2021. We gotta figure this out quick.
He's gotta get a name. It will not be Michael Chiesa. I can tell you that. Michael Chiesa just had surgery. When Jeff Neal teased fight news, everybody assumed it was Michael Chiesa. Chiesa's not gonna be fighting for a while, so.
Masvidal was the most talked about man heading into Fight Island, and then suddenly this no-name kid comes along and takes his thunder. I think he's taken everything he's worked for.
I see where you're going.
Masvidal Chimaev is the way to go.
All right, AK.
Why don't we let's just do Chimaev and Nick Diaz, original BMF champ. There you go.
Chimaev versus GSP. GSP will come every time right to face Chimaev.
Handicap match.
What happened? Guys, what happened to this?
Habib finally moves up to welterweight to fight Chimaev.
Oh, man.
Guys, is it the Spider-Man thing where they just point at each other?
Yes, the gauntlet. Have him just run the gauntlet. He would love that too. Seven, one after another.
I haven't been this excited about a prospect in a while. Like, but those two,
I can tell.
Those two beatings he put down. I was like, that shit was impressive. That was Now I just want to see him face the top tier guys. Let's see it. He wants it. Let's do it.
When he walked to the octagon tonight, like, I just knew that was going to happen. Like, he had that look at his face that goes, and you could just tell, I'm just going to walk across. I'm going to lift this man off of his feet. I'm going to slam him down, and I'm just going to beat the brakes off of him. And that's exactly what he did. That is a frightening, frightening guy at 70 or 85, because he said he would fight at both, too. So maybe, you know, maybe throw him back up to 85. Who the hell knows?
Why don't you give him, like, would you be surprised if he got a main event? Like, Izzy got a main event fight in his third fight. Again, Brad Tavares.
If it's the right opponent, I'm sure. If it's a
Shamaya Paeza,
Cerrone could headline a fight.
No, sure. I love how AK went from Miguel Baeza to Jorge Masvidal.
Thank you in the comments. Watch my 666. Shamaya 8-0 versus Baeza 8-0, and then classy monocle man emoji. Right, the math just makes sense. You almost have to match him up. And Nick Bergen, Shamaya has a better resume than Masvidal. Ooh.
Listen, I don't want to see prospect versus prospect. Throw him in there, all right? He wants this. This is what he wants. Throw him in there. You think MMA's too easy? Throw him in the top 15. Let's see if he swims.
Top five.
Let's do it.
Top five.
Top five.
Leon Edwards looking for a fight. Leon Edwards looking for a fight. Come on, man.
Well, no, that won't happen. Wouldn't hate it, but it wouldn't happen.
I'm saying a lot of things aren't going to happen, but.
Yeah. GSP comes out of retirement to fight Chimaev. Not against Usman. Not for the belt. Not the beef.
This guy.
But Chimaev. There you go. Got to get him excited. Do we have anything else, or is that it?
Yeah, that's about it.
It was the Chimaev show. I mean, yeah.
There you go.
Is he the biggest star coming out of Fight Island?
Yes.
He might be.
He made the biggest jump. The guy, like, someone I've never heard of, and now.
Yeah.
I want GSP to come out of retirement to face him. So
that's a pretty big jump.
So as far as going from here to here, yeah, by far, yeah.
All right, bigger. We'll end with this. Bigger star in Fight Island, Chimaev or Amanda Ribas?
I knew who Amanda Ribas was, and I was always excited to see her fight. But just the fact that I'm learning how to spell and say Chimaev correctly. So yeah, that's he's the star.
What about a fighter like we had a Sarukian was a big name we were talking about.
That was a good one, yeah.
Lizez, was everyone talking about Lizez too?
How many times did they fight? Once.
Sure. Yeah, but how many Z's does Chimaev have in his name? Lizez has 3 Z's in his last name.
That's true.
Oh, Lizez.
And he should fight Nico Price. There's no other fight to make. That is the fight. No other fight makes any sense at all. And I love how everyone's calling out Mike Perry. It's hilarious. Even though he's not going to be fighting anytime
soon. Mike Perry is a great prize fighter.
Yes. Oh, everybody wants a piece of Perry.
But my second star of the weekend, over Ribas actually, is my Ryzen 205 champion, Jiří.
Jiří Prochazka, man.
Man,
sensational.
Yeah.
They did a lot of good work getting some names out there on these Fight Island shows. They really did.
They did. And then we get another
Otterpops.
Former Ryzen champ fighting at UFC 252. Manel Cape.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that young man, too.
No opponent yet, by the way. They almost pulled the trigger on Cape versus Pantoja at UFC 252, but too many travel restrictions hindered that from happening. But that was very close to being a thing, and then turned out it was not a thing because he couldn't get there.
It bums me out that Shorty Torres and the UFC kind of ended on such bad terms, because Shorty Torres would inject a lot of fun into that flyweight division. Like, Shorty versus Manel Cape would be such a scrap.
I would love it.
You know what I think they're going to end up doing, because the man is just such a wild dude, is I have a feeling we're going to see Cape versus Tim Elliott.
That sounds good.
That's what I think we're going to end up seeing. I'd be down for that. Kate, it's fun.
Sign me up.
Sign it.
You know who's always a star, guys? Our readers and viewers, I have to say. I've been keeping a little bit of an eye on our view count from when we started the show, and it's actually gone up, which surprises me. Like our viewership has actually gone up as the show has progressed. I don't know. I think maybe it was all the Chimaev talk. I'm not sure.
I think they're all talking about your shirt.
Everyone's talking about my shirt. So you guys are – I say this every time, and I don't care. I'm going to say it every time I'm doing one of these. You guys are crazy. You guys watching crazy, staying up with us wherever – whatever time it is where you are. And it's just awesome when people tune in live and watch us just ramble about Shemaev versus matchups that are just never going to happen for literally 30 minutes. So so much love for everyone watching right now.
AKA the Mick Foley of MMA fighting, trying to get that cheap pop before we wrap up. Right here on the MMA fighting YouTube page. Yeah, there you go, AK. Nicely done, man. I think that's it. Any final thoughts on the trip to Fight Island? Yes, go ahead.
The true star of the week of the Fight Island, Guilherme Cruz.
Yes.
Yes. The MVP.
The dude was away from his lovely Brazil for a whole month to fly over to Fight Island and jet ski and drive Lamborghinis with supermodels and cover fist fighting.
Get top shelf COVID-19 testing.
I mean, just living the dream, but also putting it in those miles and putting those. Oh, yeah. I don't know if he slept. I do not, because every time he was, we were slacking like every second of the day about video stuff, and I'm like, dude, go to sleep.
Yeah, he's a madman.
That's the fourth guy on my Mount Rushmore. All right, it's
Hoist,
Tracy,
Anderson Silva,
Cyborg,
Guilherme Cruz.
That's it.
Well done.
And Guilherme is, of course, the most handsome one of the lot.
He is a good-looking man.
No question.
Thank you, Guilherme.
He looks like he's chiseled from stone.
All right,
Jose, before we wrap up, one more thing before we go. I know we're this is the time where you cut your promo on Mr. McGrath.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk about Mr. McGrath. Everyone wants to know, what are you going to say about Ned? I'm sorry that I'm picking on him, okay? I still want to get now McGrath looks like TJ Detweiler trending, because he does. I don't know how you can look at the man and not be like, wow, look, that's clearly the you know what they put when they put the dots on the people when they're doing the WWE games? They clearly did that with now McGrath and TJ Detweiler. So let's keep that trending. Now, you know where I am. There's not going to be a fight. So, yeah, they can talk about it on the broadcast and this and that and blah, blah, blah. We can fight. I'll still throw you in a wishing fountain. I'll still do whatever I want. And that's a wrap.
This is the dream matchup for Between the Links, by the way.
Yeah.
This is
no, because like, it this can't is... be. The first throwdown is going to be a physical confrontation. It's going to be a full one-sided martial arts exhibition. It's not even going to be a fight.
The Darren Till versus Mike Perry at Between the Links matchups.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to make it happen. We're going to have a fun Between the Links matchup this week, too. AK is going to defend against Jed Bashu. This is going to be great.
Oh, my God. It's like there's going to be so much salt coming through the screen.
I know. It's going to be exciting. So, all right, we're getting out of here. It is 1:15 on the East Coast. We're done. For Jose, AK, EKC, I am Mike Heck, Guilherme Cruz, you are the Brazilian Beast. Thank you for your coverage. Thank you for watching.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.